It's that coming up from the bottom. Day one, dollar zero type shit. The only thing I'm ducking is the graveyard. I'm really with the shit y'all niggas play hard. I made it to a Ross, I'm selling eight balls. I came up from nothing, I could never take a day off. The only thing I'm ducking is the graveyard. I'm really with the shit y'all niggas play hard. I made it to a Ross, I'm selling eight balls. I came up from nothing, I can never take a day off. Turn your baby mama crib into a stash spot. And we moving more.
I love that spot. Anytime we have a guest on, I like seeing their reaction to like our to our music. And I'm always excited to ask him, hey, is your baby mama's house a stash house too? You know, like,
might have been
super fun zero, one, man. I feel like, as much as this guy that's on today, as much as I've taught him the game of baseball, secretly, it's just that's who I really wanted to be. Everyone knows I played about 5 minutes of what this guy played, and man, Major League Baseball All-Star, right? But turned entrepreneur and doing a lot of cool stuff, and super unscripted, transparent, and honest about the process. Some of his own struggles, and then how does that apply to entrepreneurship and real estate? And obviously that hits close to home for us, Eli. Mm-hmm. Me coming from like a Marine Corps infantry and some SOCOM background and having an extreme identity and getting to a level of like just being neurotic toward a craft, and then, you know, being like a quote unquote excommunicated warrior, leaving that world. And you're not on your own, mm-hmm. but you are. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, because you just got to start over and do some different things. But boy, are you are so over-indexed in a skill set here and completely unprepared here, you know, and almost like having all the gear to climb a mountain, but like nothing to get you down. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no, you just got to jump off the mountain. Like, oh, but I don't have a parachute. Yeah, well, cool. So figure that out.
Yep,
but you're,
yep.
Hey, you're done. You're out of here. And you got to figure it out. So, you know, coming from like Major League Baseball and being an all-star to what he's doing now, it hits home for, you know, for me from a different lens, mm-hmm. but it comes from the same obsession, neurotic achievement. And I think what hit my ego, and it's not just ego, but what hit my ego a lot was not reinventing yourself, but reestablishing yourself. But you're coming from a certain level of achievement, which also means comfort, right? Like I got a comfort with military operations, police operations. There's achievement and success there, and you're letting it all go, and you're like, who the fuck am I? Like, mm-hmm. and oh my God, what a loser, bro. Like, you've done all this, and you've come this far, and then now you're just sleeping in a pantry, right? Like, true story. I'll tell you that mm-hmm. here in a second, Shay, after I'm done introducing yourself. But it's cool. I'm excited to have him on. Him and I met a little bit ago through some mutual friends, and man, but we are excited. It's Shay Hillenbrand. So if you guys don't know, third baseman. So if there's an infantry of Major League Baseball, it's fucking third base, bro. You're getting hard shots down the line. Like the Cal Ripken Juniors of the world, the Shea Hillenbrands of the world, like, mm-hmm. you know, playing left field, right field, you dive for some balls, people cheer. You know, you got some space between you and the batter. You're playing third base. Listen, dude, that's infantry. That, like, you got your combat action ribbon getting ground balls and line drives over there just getting in this shit. But super excited to have him on. He's now diving into some real estate and some entrepreneurship and leadership. And I'll leave it with this, and then we're going to let him introduce himself for a second. I get so excited when we have industry disruptors, as mm-hmm. in guys coming from a different lane of professionalism, mm-hmm. and they bring their skill set into an industry, and it gives it a fresh look, a fresh perspective. That's cool. And I feel like that's you and I, Eli. You were the born entrepreneur, 100%. Right? Like you were doing every hustle and bustle on the planet. I came from, you know, my level of leadership and certain things within the Marine Corps and law enforcement, and brought a skill set into real estate, and it freshens mm-hmm. it up, and it gives a different perspective and a different level of intensity and proficiency and culture. And Shay coming from Major League Baseball and everything that he's done into this world, dude, I get stoked for that. But there's also some dark times when you're transitioning, and true to this podcast, what was your literal day one dollar zero, right? And the stories that come with that all the way to the present. How are you still approaching every day like it's day $1 zero? There's going to be some fun stories. But before mm-hmm. we get to that, we're going to let Shay introduce himself a little bit and kind of let him give some context to his background and how he all came about. So finally, 19 minutes into this, Shay, what's up, brother?
Shay Hillenbrand, what's going on, man?
I don't think it's 19 minutes, bro, but you did a great job, man. It's the first time ever that I've done a podcast where I'm taking notes just on the freaking intro, man. So I love your context of how that is, and being able to articulate that is extremely important for people to latch onto, to be able to, you know, ingest that, interject that into their own life. So like you said, man, like man, I was Major League Baseball player. I made a ton of money. I've been a top performer pretty much my whole life. I owned a zoo. So that was my first dabble in real estate.
Owned a zoo.
I purchased a 38-acre horse farm in southern Gilbert, Arizona, and I accumulated 300 farm and exotic animals. And I have an Emmy Award-winning story that I'm
hold on,
really
hold on,
proud
hold on, hold on, hold on. We got to know. Dude. Most important question of the fucking podcast. Do you know the Tiger King?
I do not know the Tiger King, but I know that lady that
Fucking Carol Baskin.
So already say you're coming back on for one of our after hours podcasts, and we're talking about that. We're talking about that farm shit, bro. But sorry, digressing, continue.
No, yeah. So I actually helped out a roadside zoo in New Hampshire when I played for the Red Sox, and they bred a liger, a tiger, and a lion, and they named it after me. And after that roadside zoo in New Hampshire kind of disbanded,
it
was not really a good situation. That liger went down to Carol Baskin. So I went down and saw liger in spring training, and she showed me around, dude. And I was like,
cool?
This lady is kind of different, man. But this is all before any of this stuff came out. So like I said, I've been pretty much a top performer pretty much my whole life. Always went out there and just tried to achieve more so. Not the most talented person, but I have that mindset. But it didn't start that way. You see, I mean, my story starts, I'm 14 years old and I'm sitting on my bed and my dad walks into my room and he says, dude, son, we're moving. And he drops a bombshell on me and we're moving out of state. And the story I told myself, my dad left the room that day was, I'm not lovable, I'm not good enough, and my dad doesn't love me. It's like, how can you move me from beautiful Southern California to the hot desert of Arizona? Like, it's crazy. So yeah. As I reluctantly left all my childhood friends, and this is my sophomore year of high school, like defining years of my life, I decided to become an overachiever through athletics. Not to get to the big leagues, not to become the best around, but to get approval and admiration and love, prove that I was worthy enough for my parents. So high school, I became the number one soccer player, state of Arizona. And I had chances to play in Europe and I had chances to play universities. But my childhood dream growing up in LA was to play Major League Baseball. So I walked on at the local community college, Mesa Community College, out of high school. And I made the team because of my work ethic. I was the first guy there, last guy to leave every single day. And after my sophomore year, I got drafted by the Red Sox. My dream became true. I'm just rocking it. So I report the spring training 5 years into minor leagues. Man, I became player of the year 3 of the 5 years. And that gave me a chance in 2001 to become a Major League Baseball player.
So why baseball instead of soccer? When you were that great at soccer, but you still committed to baseball, what do you feel like mindset wise? Did you have some more strengths toward baseball?
I sat at the top deck in Dodger Stadium as a kid growing up in LA.
So it's that vision, right? It's a vision. It's being able to almost tangible, like what you could be by going to that stadium.
100%. So I'd sit up there at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old with my mom and my best friend. We had season tickets and I had my chocolate malt in one hand and my nachos in the other hand.
Hell yeah.
And I said, I'm going to be down there someday. I'm going to be down there someday. And what's crazy is that I inherently engaged all my senses. I'd hear the crack of the bat. I'd feel the roar of the crowd, the energy. I'd smell the grass. And I'd always imagine now batting number 29, Shea Hillenbrand.
Yeah.
Like I'd always do that. But when I went home at night, when I was a kid, I'd lay in bed and I'd envision being on ESPN. I'd envision being on TV and in the major league stadiums, cashing major league checks, all that crap that you kind of hear with the movie, The Secret, which is all whatever. But I did that stuff because visualization is so powerful. And so many of us just don't understand how to utilize that.
You're a father, correct? You're a dad, right?
I have 5 kids, yeah, bro.
I know. I know you do. I'm just letting, it's for the viewers.
No, I'm just saying,
but here's what's
man.
So crazy. Here's what is so freaking crazy, man. This is why, especially coming from like fatherhood, right? This is why it's so important to, hey, you want your kids to work hard and put the amount of effort that's needed to be successful at something. But this is also why you don't want to kill your kids' dreams. Like there's so many things we do well as kids with daydreaming and smelling the grass and visualizing certain things. And then we get to adulthood. And it's almost like you have to relearn how to visualize and put yourself into a moment. And it's like, man, just like baseball, man. Like I went to a Cal Ripken Jr. camp one time and he talked about all these coaches that are fucking kids up trying to make them throw all the same way. And he's like, look, man, kids naturally throw the ball uber well, especially if they kind of know how to throw the ball. It's everything that coaches start implementing into them that just aren't letting them utilize the movement of their body. And it's so crazy when we're kids, or like you ever see a kid naturally squat, mm-hmm. like when they're pooping in their
literally
diaper?
Perfect.
Perfect squat.
Yeah, perfect.
And then it gets fucked up along the way. And it's like, yep. it's almost like Benjamin Buttons or some weird shit, man, because you have to relearn, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of this stuff. And it's cool what you're saying, Shay, because, you know, as we progress in this podcast, I'm super excited to hear how this bleeds into your kids. And now that you've, you know, reflected on a lot of this stuff, you know, like how you can then show, because the one thing you don't have when you're a kid is the intention behind mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. When you learn how to visualize and do certain things mindset wise as adults, you have a lot of direction and intention with what you're doing. When you're kids, you're uber good at daydreaming and visualizing. You just don't realize the power of what you're doing and how to actually, you know, apply that with super intention. So, but didn't mean to cut you off, but man, that's so powerful hearing, because you're one of the first guys that have talked at length about yourself as a kiddo like that. And I feel like I was the same way. Only our baseball careers didn't go the same, but you had a better visualization than me, buddy. But
no, I just got luckier with the opportunities I had. Right?
Come on, bro. So I want you to speak to some of your talent though, too. Cause hey, you show up first. I have a lot of friends, bro. They showed up first to practice. They were the last ones to leave, and they were not good. They just weren't gonna, they didn't have the capacity to get to the next level. So when you're,
but I think that capacity comes from your heart and from your mindset. And so many people, you know, like what separated me from the rest of the pack, from my friends, my comrades or whatever, as I scaled to the top, was that when stuff got monotonous and boring, and when I started suffering, I just kept going, bro.
Got it.
And I just kept going. And that allowed me to tap into, which I call like the 40%, because most people tap out at 60% of their potential. And I just kept going, and I just kept going, and I just kept going. So it's that drive, and it's that hunger, it's that proof of doing that, that I think that was a separator. And I think that's one of the main common denominators that you see between successful people. And then that interest turns into a hunger, then it turns into a passion. And then as you said at the beginning, as you go to the top, it has to turn into an obsession. Like you have to be obsessed with what you do to have success and stay at the top of the world.
How did you get to that top? Like, I guess I'll give you some context on that, on my question, but I'm super curious how you got to that next, that extra 40% when you were doing that. Like, so for example, for me, like, I was the other guy. I was uber talented at football and baseball. I'm left-handed. I was throwing the ball just over 90 miles an hour coming out of high school. Played for a junior college World Series team. But I didn't work that hard, man. I went to practice, and when I was at practice, I practiced hard. You know, and I'd go to the weight room with the guys after, because getting buff arms got you some chicks, right? So cool, but like,
it just makes you feel better about yourself.
Right, yeah. But I didn't have that neurotic obsession toward baseball. I was really good at it, and I really enjoyed it. And the second I got to that next level, which I call like the business of baseball, you start getting into, mm-hmm. you know, Major League Baseball, it changes, and was I not prepared for that. You know, I had a buddy pass away on his first deployment in the Marine Corps, and I bounced because of fear. I bounced because of discomfort, and I bounced because I didn't have that, that extra 40% and that work ethic to really break through, you know. And then, so I learned my 40%. Once I got to the Marine Corps, man, and I started being a part of the infantry community. And I, you know, I always talk about being a part of special operations for a little while, but I've got more pride in being a Marine Corps infantryman, because that's the rodeo, bro. That's cowboy shit out of all. Like, if the Marine Corps is the fucking rodeo, the infantry is the bull ride, not the Bronco ride, not the horse ride, not the sheep ride, not the fucking popcorn rodeo bull riding, right? Like, and I had the extra 40% put into me. You didn't have a choice. They were going to pull that shit out of you, mm-hmm. and your men were reliant on you. But then, man, like going through school of infantry, they work you like a dog, and they bring the dog out in you. But then I started taking pride in being a dog in the fight. I started taking pride in being dirty and fucking tired and like, yeah, people don't want to do this, but we're doing this. So I have that barometer now, but that was in place. That was impregnated into me by guys that were coming out of Operation Iraqi Freedom 1 that were infantrymen and squad leaders that were coming to teach a school of infantry, and they birthed that into me. How did you get your 40%? Like, was it coaches that were pushing you to that next level, or was it just kind of like your own mindset where you kind of tripped up upon it before you knew it, you were neurotic about it? Or how did that come about as far as you talking about that extra 40%?
That's a great question. And I've never been asked that question, believe it or not. But for me, it was the pain. It's the pain from the perspective that I formed at 14 years old. I'm not lovable. I'm not good enough. My dad doesn't love me. So I had this pain inside me that drove me to the top, that was fuel But when you have that pain drive you and not know where it's coming from and know how to navigate that pain, you can have success, but you can't sustain success with whatever you're trying to achieve. What's different between Major League Baseball and where you were in the Marine Corps is that, you said it, it's demanded there. Mm-hmm. In Major League Baseball, it's not demanded there. You could show up and do whatever you want. They'll just replace you and you'll have you know, and you're just relying on talent or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I was that kid and I left high school, went to junior college. It's the middle of the summer out here in Arizona. It's 120 degree heat. I ride my bicycle 15 miles to the junior college in the middle of the summer in the heat. And then I'd hit for 3 hours. And then my buddies would, you know, hey, put your bike in the back of the pickup, man. Like, and I'll take you home because it's like tired. I said, no, bro. Like, I'm riding home. That's what's going to separate me, driving, riding 15 miles there, hitting, and then 15 miles back, and my competition wasn't doing that. So I said, if I could just do that, I will get a one-up on my competition of just controlling my mindset, and in return, controlling and directing my future of where I want to go. But
did coaches like you? Coaches appreciated your work? Coaches appreciated your success? Like, what was your relationship with your coaches or your teammates?
Man, I love your questions, man. I got kicked off my junior high team. I got kicked off my high school team. I got kicked off my junior college team. I got in fights with managers 5 times a year in each team of the minor leagues. And I got kicked out of probably 7 to 8 games a year in the minor leagues because of arguing or telling an umpire to go to hell. That authoritative figure was directed in my life because of my relationship with my father.
So it's almost like you were... sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, I don't give a damn what y'all are doing. I'm going to the big leagues. I don't care.
Yeah.
So I leveraged every opportunity that I had through preparation. Because everything's in preparation and how you work and prepare yourself and prepare your mindset to go. I say this lightly, for us to go to battle every single night in that batter's box. I'm going to war. I'm like I'm either doing two things. I'm getting a hit off this fool or I'm throwing my bat in his face.
Yeah.
And if the third base coach is out, the manager, if he talks crap to me, I'm just releasing my bat and maybe hitting him too.
Yeah.
So it's like I played the wrong sport to have that mindset, but it was like, I don't care what it is. It's like that, you know, Tim Grover. It's the cleaner mindset. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like Kobe's in the gym and he's going to spend 4 hours in the gym just to be 30 minutes longer than the guy that was in the gym on the other team. I'm showing you that you ain't going to beat me. You're not going to take my job. It doesn't matter what you do.
And if they don't like you,
myself.
Yeah. And it's like it's becoming so good. They don't have a choice but to recognize and have you on that field because you're winning. Right. So it's twofold. It's like the more you loved and put work into baseball, the more the game loved you back. Right? Because you were having success. You were playing better.
It was filling that void, bro.
And you almost were like becoming successful out of spite. Right? Like these, you know, these coaches you're fighting with or arguing with. And it's like you kept pouring more into the game of baseball. And the harder they kicked back, like the more you gave to the game. And the game itself was loving you back. But because maybe there's not a positive response from coaches or other people, you kept pouring into the game. And you almost like became successful at us in spite. Almost,
it's to you're exactly correct. So what it is it's an escape, right? So when I was a kid, I'd go throw the ball against the wall or kick the soccer ball to escape my internal world of hell from those stories that I told myself from experiences. And those stories that I tell myself from experiences, whether it's with my father, whether it's an authoritative figure that I did, that formed a perspective.
Yeah.
And that perspective that I formed ultimately broke me. See, we have these experiences we go through, and then however we interpret and communicate those experiences to ourselves forms a story. And that's what I want to convey to everybody that's watching or listening to this, is like that story forms your identity of who you are. So I didn't know who I was before I went into what I did. So when you go into something that's high pressure, you attach your identity to that because you don't have identity outside of what you do. What we need to understand is like when I went to the stadium every night, I had a hitting coach, I had a throwing coach, I had a fielding coach, I had a strength coach, I had a mental coach to help us on the performance. I had a videographer just videoing every aspect so we could analyze that. We had a masseuse, we had a chef, we had an orthopedic surgeon, with everything that I ever wanted to work on Shea Hillenbrand, the performer, because it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Right.
But when I left the stadium each and every night, And I want to say this to the real estate agents, the entrepreneurs, like we go get all this training for industry specific training, but we're missing the boat because we're the talent, the ability, the fulfillment, the success, the Uber success comes from the person behind the performer. So when I left the stadium each and every night, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a coach. I didn't have anybody to confide in. Matter of fact, I had a sports psychologist that I took along with me on the road, and I paid him with hookers and weed. Like, I just had him just fluff me and tell me that I'm doing good. Like, you don't trust anybody when you're there. And the reason why I figured out that I didn't trust anybody when I was there, because yes, people are coming at you. People want everything from you because you're a celebrity. I'd had little girls in the stands holding signs like, "Will you marry me, Shay?" I do autograph signings for $10,000 an hour, and girls are coming to the table crying and shaking just because they got to meet me. Like, I feel like I'm like Bieber. I'm like, what is this?
But even like, you don't know you. Or like, you don't trust
that deep pain, bro, inside of me, fueling that pain driven game. Yeah. So what I didn't realize is that I didn't have anybody to understand and help me because I didn't trust nobody. And when I pulled back the layers of the onion and said, okay, why didn't Shay trust anybody? See, I wasn't afraid of 101 mile an hour fastball. I wasn't afraid of performing in front of the lights on the stadium, people with popcorn and Stephen A. Smith talking crap about me to get ratings or whatever that is. I didn't care. There was only one thing I was scared of, and that was myself. And the reason why I was scared of myself, that if I felt like if I got my back against the wall and somebody pushed me to the point, I would just explode. I would just Google me, man. I got in a fight with the manager in Toronto, like all over ESPN. Yeah. I called Theo Epstein, the general manager for the Red Sox that traded me, the first like explicitives on the radio. Like, I did all these things and I figured it out. It's because I didn't trust myself.
Well, in the, yeah, and if you don't trust yourself or quite know who you are, it's hard to trust others and their intentions. Like, it's for impossible. Me, it's impossible. Like, for me, I've gotten to a point of transition where I trust myself and I'm getting a good grasp on who I am, which means I'm okay to put trust in others because I know if they fail me, I'm my own beacon. I'm my own barometer. So I'm okay to go out there and let others in this industry or team up or collaborate with other people and allow some trust because I know I can pull myself back out of that safely. Because of that, and like Elon and I having a special relationship and how that works. But that's interesting, man. And it's almost like you remind me of like being like the pit bull of baseball, right? Because pit bulls are big and strong, but they have a huge heart. Mm-hmm. And tender. They've got that one toy.
Oil.
They've got that one toy or that one person. And like your person wasn't a person, it was baseball. So when you were playing ball, it's like you're there and you're present and this whatever. But if anybody tried to attack your game of play, manager, fans, anything, it was like, I'm going to rip your fucking head off because this is mine. Like, this is the one thing no one can take from me. Baseball's not going to leave me. It's not going to not love me. If I pour in, if I give all this effort and this consistency and this obsession to it, it's mine. And no one can take that from me. And if you're trying to tell me to bunt or if you're trying to tell me to like, I'm not good enough for this team or whatever, if you're threatening the relationship between myself and baseball, I'm going to take your fucking head off, you know? And it's like, but it comes from a place of misunderstanding, but it's like, so you're like that big pit bull that's calloused itself and built up that strength and that resilience. But then at the end of the day, you've got this uber big fucking heart. And I can tell that because of your want and your ambition to tell the truth and talk about feelings and help people fix the well, not the sink is what I like to say. I think that's a Gary Vee quote, but you know, really diving in and giving your honest story to others for the sake of betterment of others, that's where you can tell no matter how calloused you are from what you had to be to play the game, deep down you've got this big fucking heart. And it just reminds me of how misunderstood pit bulls are. They've got huge hearts and you could have your little baby jumping all over them. But if that pit bull's misunderstood or put into an environment where it doesn't feel a certain way, it could look like the fucking meanest thing on the planet. But in reality, it's just an environment. It's misunderstood. It's its own circumstances or whatever it may be. And it's, man, it's interesting to hear you talk about some of that stuff.
It's all wrapped up in identity, like you're saying. So, right. So here I am on the field of Baltimore, the Orioles, opening day. And I'm on the field, I'm starting, and they announce us the national anthem. And I look up and I have tears coming down my face because I'm like, I did it. Mm. Like, I did it.
That's so
like,
cool.
All the way from 7, 8, 9 years old, like had a baseball in one hand and a glove in the other hand, pursuing that dream like so many other kids in the United States, millions of kids. I did it.
All over the world. Not even the United States, bro. Like literally all over the world.
But it's the American dream, right? To play Major League Baseball. But I had this pain inside myself that is just like, it's disgust, because ultimately all I was trying to do was get approval from my father, because we had a generational curse. So over the next 7 years of my career, man, insane. I became a two-time All-Star. Like started in the All-Star game in front of hundreds of millions of people. I made $20 million. I was the first guy to hit a game-winning home run off of Mariano Rivera at Fenway Park as a Red Sox player, running the bases
and
the ground shaking because of what I did.
Yeah.
And it's like you're like a David beating Goliath. Insane. I was in a perfect game with Randy Johnson playing first base. I had 3 home runs in consecutive innings in one game for highlight after highlight after highlight after. I was flying private jets. I was doing the stuff that all of us entrepreneurs are trying to achieve, especially in the real estate space, because you can create generational wealth inside the real estate space. Yep. I'm flying private jets. I have multiple mansions. I have 6 automobiles. When you're rich and you got ego, you call them automobiles. You don't call them cars. I have 300 pairs of shoes, bro.
Yeah.
And I have anything and everything I want on top of the world, bro. And like on TV in front of everybody, but I don't have fulfillment. I don't know who I am, and I don't have control of my life. And that's the message I want to convey to your viewers, because all this other stuff is fluff, but this is what's translatable to everybody out there. So that pain from that perspective I formed at 14 freaking years old, I'm not lovable, I'm not good enough, my dad doesn't love me, was driven inside my subconscious belief system, and I was numb to everyone and everybody around me.
And it's not, and it's interesting to hear, and we're going to dive more into it when you talk about like, hey, all this other stuff is just fluff. Like it is, but it's not. It gives context to hard work and sacrifice and everything you did to achieve that, yet still wasn't fulfilled. And like, that's, you know, when people say, hey, money won't make you happy. Mike Tyson talked about it. He goes, hey, if you think money's going to make you happy, you've never had any, you know, and you hear some guys, you know, talk about that and it's interesting, man. And curious as far as like your relationship with your father, is that, have you ever spoken about some of this with him? Have you ever kind of opened up with that? Is that, cause I come from a baby boomer dad as well. Right. And like, that's, we'll call it interesting. How about that? We'll use the word interesting for now, but I've had some interesting days with my own father and some of the similarities, like, you know, like with you. And has that ever opened up with your father? Is there any improvements there per se? Or if not, hey, is there a way that you're fathering now toward your own children to try to close the gap so they don't have that same relationship with you that you did with yours?
2005, I'm flying from Chandler Airport in Arizona to Detroit, Michigan to play in the All-Star game. I'm flying in a Citation 10 jet, the fastest civilian jet in the world. I'm going 64,000 feet, 640 miles an hour. I'm in a jet by myself, going to my childhood dream. Imagine yourself, pilot, co-pilot, yourself, 10-passenger jet with no distractions, no entourage, no wife, no kids, no nothing, myself. I look out the window. I can't see the ground. I'm so high. Getting ready to play in front of 100 million people. I don't give a crap what anybody says. That's balling, bro. Mm-hmm. But I look out the window, and the thoughts going through my mind are, is this all it is?
Wow.
Is this what it's all about? I freaking hate everything about this. And I go to the All-Star game and I'm playing third base in Detroit, Michigan, 2005 All-Star game in front of, like I said, 100. And my dad and my mom at their top deck of the stadium, because I cut my parents out of my whole career. I have to live with that. With doing that to my father and my mother. And my dad's up there looking down, and he's really proud of me. And he's telling the ushers, he's telling the security guards, he's telling all the fans, that's my boy down there playing third base. And they're like, why are you up here? I don't know, but we love him. Although I have my entourage, I have everybody down there with me on the field and the home run derby and the clubhouse, and my parents are up there. And I'm looking at third base in front of 100 million people up there. And I'm like, I freaking hate this guy. It's perspective. I cut my parents out of my whole career, and I have to live with that. My life transpired about 8 years ago, and I met my current wife, and she was a saving grace from God. And she says, you have to get back in your relationship with your freaking father. So I discovered my story. I discovered why I did what I did. I made $20 million playing Major League Baseball. I was slated to be a $100 million player. I don't care about the money. So when I left the game, I was so obsessed, fascinated. Like, why did Shea just reach one-fifth of his potential? And I reverse engineered everything. I was like, okay, the decisions and actions I made were driven from my perspective. My perspective is driven from my story and experiences. And I have to go back. And I actually rewrote history. You can't change what happened with experiences in your life, but you can change the perspective. But you have to go there. And it's so hard for so many of us men to go there because there's pain attached to it. There's ego, there's pride, and it's a sign of weakness. But I sat down 5 years ago at my parents' supper table, and I shared my parents my story. My dad cried. I cried. And my dad said, you know what, son, we've been trying to tell you this your whole life. Because the perspectives I formed from the stories were incorrect. When my dad moved us from California to Arizona, it was to give me a chance to play Major League Baseball, but he didn't know how to communicate anything to me because we have a generational curse. And what my dad went through was way worse than whatever I went through with pulling his mom out of bars at 14 because his dad wouldn't do it, and he's just not good enough, and he's not lovable, and his dad doesn't love him, but he didn't have the equipment and the tools to be able to navigate through those things because, you know, we really don't do that during those times. Just pull up your bootstraps. Let's go. We got to be a man. We got to go out there and provide and protect. And he did that stuff. But the stories I told myself were 100% incorrect. So I was able to rekindle my relationship with my father. I was able to reestablish that and change that perspective. I didn't rewrite history with the experiences, but I changed that perspective, and I had breakthroughs in my life. And like, when you have those breakthroughs, you have clarity, you have empowerment, you feel like just released, and you discover new things that you didn't know were possible, because so many people are holding themselves back with the stories they tell themselves on a daily basis. Sure. So my father passed away 4 years ago, and he donated his body to science. And my mom called me in the middle of the night, and I knew that phone call was the call. Get over here, son. And I sat with my father for 2 hours, and I witnessed what he put my mother through for 52 years, and her standing by his side and sitting there holding his hand while he was dead and just waiting for them to pick up his body. And when there was time to say goodbye, I leaned over and I kissed my father in the head and I said, Father, I'm going to use my voice to impact the world. And that's what's driving me now. That's what's moving me now with what I'm trying to achieve and what I'm trying to do is to use my voice to help people that might not have that opportunity to be where they are because they're jammed up. And when I did that and pulled back the layers of the onion, I really discovered new gifts and talents and things. I never thought I'd ever be doing this, brother.
Yeah.
And it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting you talk about that because, like, I've had similar stuff with my dad. And I think the biggest thing over the past couple of years for me, not even just with my father, but with other friends, just other close relationships, like, how we receive love isn't necessarily how people give it, right? I know they talk about that in the five languages of love in that book. But
five love languages, bro. Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to read, but, like, the one thing is, like, you know, and the one thing that my wife is really good at is she recognizes how I love. So instead of like her focusing on how she receives love and then, hey, you're not loving me. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? She's more, just her natural disposition. She's able to see, hey, this is how Will expresses and shows love. He's loving me. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't try to like decode it mm-hmm. and translate it to make it fit how she receives it. And I've been in a place in life where I just didn't have the capacity to understand that. If someone wasn't giving me love in the way that I understand and recognize love, I didn't know that they were loving, you know? And then you just have to like, just give a little bit of like forgiveness there of like just benefit of doubt and people doing the best and trying to recognize the love in them and where they're giving that. And like, man, it's funny because Eli, we'll let him talk in a minute. He took me up to the mountains and we did mushrooms, you know? And I think we were total like 4 grams in by the end of it and no distraction, but like, it strips you of your ego. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing was it also helped me identify ego. Like I thought I knew what ego was. I thought ego was like you're puffing your chest and it's like, yes, mm-hmm. that's the very strong version of ego. But there's underlying layers of ego that subconsciously you don't even recognize you like you have until you're aware of it. And it just let me really have some perspective on myself and on others. And just when other people haven't necessarily done right by me or have made mistakes and haven't made right on them. It's like, yeah, but man, we're all just these humans trying to figure it the fuck out on this planet. Yep. And it's like, man, like, hey, I love you, man. Like it's, you know, and it just, it kind of opened my eyes, you know, as far as some of that. And man, jumping a little bit forward, you know, I want to talk about your day $1.0, right? So we're getting familiar with like where you were at in professional baseball, you know, and as you started transitioning out of baseball, if you're cool, if we transitioned and we start getting more into the entrepreneur stuff, you know, so you're leaving baseball, regardless of how much money you got in the bank or don't have in the bank, what was your feeling of like your literal, okay, this is my day one and dollar zero of this new endeavor. I'm no longer in baseball. I'm venturing out into this. I don't want to call it rock bottom, but you know, day $1.0 is kind of a play on rock bottom, but like, what was the feeling when you first felt, man, I'm out of ball and I'm doing this? Because for me, it was like, I got excited. You know, I'm leaving like the military world and I left police world. I was helping my buddy build his fitness company before Elon and I built a real estate one. And I was excited at first, but then you're like, oh, it's real now. I'm sleeping in a fucking pantry. I've got zero fucking money. Mm-hmm. I've got zero identity. What the fuck? Like the excitement kind of goes away when you get like, kind of like when you're excited, like you're motivated about getting in shape again tomorrow morning. Like I'm going to do this. Cool. You start drinking your pre-workout the next morning and then you walk out the door and it's snowing and you're still tired and then you start running and you're like, oh, I'm not energized for this. This is not fun. I can hear both of my feet flopping on the fucking ground. They sound so heavy. I'm out of breath 30 steps into this. And that's when like the reality sets in. What was like you transitioning out of ball, like that literal day $1.0? What did that feel like? What did it look like? What were you doing? Were you starting off in real estate and this leadership stuff? Was it something different? I mean, what was that like for you kind of like rebirthing yourself?
Yeah. So in the prime of my major league career, I walked away. Like I quit. I left $50 million of potential earnings on the table. And I said, I need to run, numb, and flee from this pain that I'm experiencing because I ultimately attached that pain to baseball. I didn't
know. What made you leave, by the way? Before we go to your day when I was zero, what was your mind? What made you walk away? What made you leave? Did you?
I hated it. I hated every aspect of it. The only thing I liked about baseball was the first and the 15th. That's when we got paid. Yeah. We got paid a shit ton of money. So
I love
other
you.
Than that, like it's just like it's crazy because there's so much involved because we do it every single day. So if you don't know how to fight that fight, I left. I just walked away. And I was that kid in fifth grade that when Mr. Murphy came around, he says, okay, let's dream day, guys. What do you guys want to do when you grow up? And I was vigorously raising my hand in the back of the room and he said, okay, Shay, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm gonna play Major League Baseball and I'm gonna own a zoo. And my classmates laughed at me like, really? I'm like, I'm going to do it. So when I left baseball, I had a great idea of buying a zoo. So I purchased a 38-acre horse farm and I not had one business, but three businesses. And I accumulated 300 farm and exotic animals. I had camels, kangaroos, llamas, alpacas, monkeys, raccoons, 2 800-pound Wilshire pigs that are Taco Bell and Gilbert. I had a blind horse with a C&I pony, a three-legged goat named Trace. I had a Holstein cow named Biggie Smalls, and I had a miniature donkey named Tupac, and they'd have wars. So we had to separate the fools so we'd have, brat, they don't shoot you. So I had this vision of rescuing these animals with unconditional love and then rehabilitate them and then putting them in a petting zoo environment out here in Arizona and get them to interact with disabled child crisis and kids that are struggling. Disabled kids. Wow. And I had a train. I had everything out there. And the joy I received over the next 4 years, witnessing my animals transform thousands of children's lives in my community through my nonprofit foundation, Against All Odds, was priceless. I'm bound to get that fulfillment now. I'm bound to get what I've been searching for because Major League Baseball didn't do it. The fame, the glory, the money, the status, all that stuff didn't do it. I'm bound to do it through serving and helping other people. But it didn't because I found myself at 3 o'clock in the morning 7 years ago on the floor of a van. And when I was on the floor of this van, I was motionless after overdosing on drugs and alcohol. Here lies someone that so many people envy. I was parked outside my ex-wife's house. I was feeding my children Little Caesar's pizza by getting change out of the cup holder 7 years ago. My children were just inside this house at arm's distance away. And after overdosing on drugs and alcohol, just to try to numb that pain, I wasn't an alcoholic, I wasn't a drug addict, but I had to just do, I couldn't figure out how to escape that pain. As my soul's leaving the top of my head and I'm clinging onto my last breath, the thoughts going through my mind are, you're a loser, you lost everything, you're a failure. What would your parents think if you left this world today, Shay? What kind of dad would do this to his kids? Are you freaking kidding me? My answer to that was, I don't know. I'm nothing if I don't have baseball. So I just let go. I don't know if I died, if I fell asleep. Like, my name had become the game of baseball. I'm Shay Hillenbrand, the Major League Baseball player, my identity. But by the grace of God, I woke up the next day without any side effects, no nothing. And I said, I got to get going. I got to do something, because I've done everything I could to try to kill myself, but not kill myself, but like to try to escape all the world of hell I was experiencing. So I said, man, I got to get into momentum, like ASAP, by stacking little wins. So I just got up on level one. See, the way I became a Major League Baseball player, one of the best hitters in the world, I mastered hitting off the batter's tee. So many people don't master level one, the foundation of what you need to do to stack a foundation to grow on. And so many guys are like, I want to go to level 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But you have to master level one. So level one for most people, for me at that time, I had to stop the bleeding. I had to stop freaking lying to myself. I had to stop writing off that ego and that veil of Major League Baseball player. I had to look in the mirror and say, you know what, dude? You're scared. You don't have anything. But we just create momentum, one step in front of the other. See, when you create momentum in your life, guys, you get rewarded. Like, life's about momentum. Progression is the key to happiness. Then I had to start understanding, like, my internal dialogue. The most important conversation any of us have is a conversation we have with ourselves. And the conversations I was having with myself were so negative. You're a loser. You're stupid. And I'd say that audibly out loud. And if you say a negative thing out loud, it's like 70% getting ingrained into your mind and who you are.
It's almost like a verbal display of like people who cut themselves, like cutters. They want to feel pain. It's almost like you were saying terrible things to yourself. It's like a verbal punishment. It's like a verbal display of pain toward yourself to punish yourself, but it only puts you, you know, deeper and deeper and deeper, you know, into a hole. And it's cool that you talk about stacking wins, man. Like I've been there, man. Like it's, and I've got something that I talk about. I heard from a friend before, because everyone talks about their why. What's your why? Influence, or, you know, and it's like, oh fuck, people know their why. Fuck me, I'm a moron. Not to bad talk myself here, but I'm like, man, like I think mine is influence. But to get hyper specific with that, I think it's ever evolving. And it's like, man, what is my why? Like, man, I just think like you got to reach a place of enlightenment. And I think you reflect back at the end of your life on your why. I don't think you really achieve it as you're going through, but, or maybe some people don't, and I'm just stupid. But here's what I can say, and that's more relatable, and you're speaking to it. People don't change until it's too painful not to, right? And I think pain points are more relatable and they resonate better. More than when you're in that dark place, or when you're lost, or when you're scared, or whatever it is, and someone's like, well, you just got to find your why, bro. You just got to wake up every day, and you just got to find your why and know what you're on this planet for. Hey, fuck you, bro. You telling me that lets me know you have zero context on how I feel right now, and I need you to get out of my fucking face. But knowing who you don't want to be will change you, right? Like, when you've gone through enough pain, like that's like people don't change until it's too painful not to. It's literal. Mm-hmm. It's, man, I don't know my why. I don't know what I want to be, but I know who I don't want to be. I don't want to be a drunk. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be on drugs. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. Okay, so I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to drink a gallon of water. Yeah, or I don't want to be. And I was like, knowing who you fucking don't want to be is almost more important, especially at rock bottom, than knowing your fucking why. And now that I'm in a good place with myself, I do a little bit more forecasting on, hey, man, I do appreciate the influence I have, and where do I want to take my influence with people? But even at that level, when we talk about public speaking or building our real estate, I still keep in mind who I don't want to fucking be, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in this industry. And it's, and I just feel like knowing who I don't want to be resonates so much more for me. Like for you at rock bottom, it's like, hey man, I don't want to be this right here. So I'm going to wake up and drink a gallon of water. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to say hi to my kids. I'm going to, you know, and then you just, like you say, you start stacking those wins. And as you carry momentum through and through, you'd be surprised. But like, does that resonate for you as well, man? Like just knowing who you don't want to be versus like going to some fucking sauna with a bunch of Indians and figuring out your why as you smoke fucking peyote. I don't know, man. Like it's a, that's just a hard one for me to grasp.
It is 100%. And that's just, I think that's, I don't know. I don't want to say, but it's like, I believe that's like surface level stuff. So what I had to do is I had to gain credibility with myself. So yeah. I didn't have to have any credibility with who I was because I was one of the best in the world as a performer of what I did. So I could always hide behind that. But as you said, when you leave that, you don't have that to hide behind anymore. And it exposes you. You're like naked out in the world. It's like, I don't even know how to do this.
Yeah.
So I started getting credibility with myself because I had zero self-esteem. Check this out. I'd hit game-winning home runs in Yankee Stadium in front of 40,000 people against Mike Mussina or whatever. I'd be on ESPN. I had the third highest active batting average in Yankee Stadium. Like I could perform on stage in the biggest stage of baseball at all, easily. But we go out to a five-star restaurant, $4,000 meal at the end of the night. I'm on ESPN watching myself highlights, and I'd almost pee my pants every single time at the table because I couldn't step to the plate, the dinner plate, because I was fear. I had fear of everybody staring at me if I got up from there to walk across the restaurant to use the restroom. I didn't know who I was. And that's where a lot of people are, I believe, with what I've experienced, is that we don't know who we are. We have no self-esteem or self-worth. So how do we have go from that to where I am now? It's just keeping the promises to myself. It's it sounds so cliche, but it's true. So it's like if I'm going to wake up tomorrow at 7, wake up at 7. And I have to keep myself accountable. Nobody else. I mean, if I do it, yeah, good job. If I don't, come on, Shay, let's go, dude. You got to do better at this crap. If I say I'm going to drink a gallon of water, if I'm going to go exercise or do a certain amount of things towards gaining momentum in my profession, whatever, just freaking do it. Regardless of what you think or what you feel or what your mind's telling you what to do. That's how I was able to hit in front of 40,000 every night. I told my mind what to do, and I just translated those skill sets that I've mastered in that space into my personal life because I finally had to do that.
Yep.
And that's just keeping credibility with yourself. Your self-esteem goes up, your self-worth, your attitude changes, your outlook, your perspective, all those things, just getting that momentum a little bit each day.
And I can speak to that.
Yeah. Every day.
Well,
every
first, day. Two things, by the way. I'm a Yankee fan. So you reminding me how good you were in Yankee Stadium, you're lucky you're not here right now. I'd try to beat you up. It's a sad reminder of you.
That's fine, dude. You can beat me up, but I still rank the Yankee Stadium.
I know. It's fucking awesome. But that's what's so fun about.
Funny is like I grew up a diehard Dodger fan, and I played for the Sox. So everybody's like, oh, you're a Red Sox player. I'm like, no, they paid my paycheck, dude.
Yeah, dude. It's like, it's funny. Like now, yeah, it's funny. But man, I love what you're talking about because here's where I was at, right? Like I had some people know the story. I've spoken about it before, but I'm 2 weeks, you know, like I'm starting in a pantry. My buddy's mom's old Y2K pantry when I leave. So I went from military operations, government work, police work. Then I helped a buddy build 14 franchises in fitness. And then I left that. And when I started over and I left that, I was sleeping in my buddy's mom's pantry studying for real estate. And I'm by distilled water and Fig Newtons and canned food and fucking like just a real pantry from the year 2000. For all of you youngsters, they thought the fucking world was going to end. We're still here. But she still had that pantry. I guess it's her COVID pantry now, I guess we'll call it. But, you know, and like, so I'm there for like 2-3 months. I'm studying. I get it done. My wife is like, hey, she's living with her parents and our daughter's with her. And she's like, hey, you got to get out of that pantry. You're getting ready to study for your license. It's time to get going. I can afford a little condo for ourselves. So let's do it. So I'm like, hey, cool. But I didn't even want to go home because I wasn't contributing to that rent check. Right. Like she was paying for that. And so I'd be working all day, all night to just hustle and earn my keep. And I'm 2 weeks into real estate. You know, like I got rid of all my cars. You know, I made decent money, but I didn't save money. So I was broke. I was at $36 when I was starting real estate. So I'm mad at myself for that. I'm mad at myself for the position I put myself in. I've had all these accomplishments through military and police work. And then, but here I am, you know, just now getting out of a pantry, my fucking baby mama's paying the rent. Like, great. You're just accomplished. Right. And, I got rid of all my cars. My mom signed for a car for me. She bought a car for me, you know, and I had one car to trade in that we couldn't sell. And it was upside down in equity, of course. So my mom signed. I didn't have any money at the time. I hadn't made no money in real estate. So she had to sign for this car by herself. Bless my mom. She's my number one fan. She's like, all right, well, don't fuck it up, man. I got you. But so I'm like, cool. So I'm the owner of that dealership drives my mom home. I get the car and I'm going straight back to work. As I'm going to work, I get a call that, one of our combat Marine friends, Calvin, passed away. He got hit on his motorcycle by an SUV, died on scene. Not good. And, you know, he had closer friends than me. But that one just hit me because I'm like, man, I'm sitting here in a fucking tie that's not mine, driving a car that's not mine, going to this fucking job, you know, that's not mine. And who the fuck? Like, I felt like I had no identity, right? Mm-hmm. I go, I suck it up at work for a couple hours, make some calls. And then I start going home and my wife calls me on my way home and, hey, just checking on you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm coming home. And she's like, hey, what's the matter? And I told her what happened. And she's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. And, you know, and I get home and she's crying and I'm like, hey, don't cry for me. You know, like his family, his closer friends, because they were in California, you know, so like he had other closer friends than me. I was more of an acquaintance, but because of where I was at in my life, this one just hit me hard. And she's like, no, like we have to talk. And I go, great. Got fucking friends dying. I'm wearing some stupid tie. I'm in this car that my mom gave me. My wife's uber hot. So like, yeah, I'm broke. You're uber hot. Here comes the talk. We're no longer together, right? Like here comes the fucking John Deere letter in person. There's an envelope on the counter. So I'm thinking that's the fucking letter. And I make some stupid comment that thank goodness she didn't even understand what I was trying to say because it was sarcastic. And she was like, what? No. And she's like, just, you know, I'm like, all right, well, let me grab some water. I go to the kitchen, I grab some water, I'm preparing myself for another failure of her telling me, you know, I don't know, she's dating Mel Gibson, I don't fucking know. And I open up, and it's not that, right? Of course, right? Like, the things that you think of and just create in your mind when you're in a bad place is, like, it's astonishing, right? So I'm opening up this letter, this envelope, on the counter, and it's a pregnancy test, and we're pregnant. Mm. And the feeling of losing a friend and feeling so unfulfilled and so just a failure and sad and you know, this Marine passing away, like that hits me. And then, oh my gosh, but we're having a baby. Like that was like a tornado of emotion. And I just went numb. I went blank. You know, and like, bless her heart, man. She didn't try to make me respond in a certain way. She felt more bad that the news is coming 2 hours after you heard about your friend, but I don't have the heart to keep this from you. I want you to know as soon as I know. And I said, I just got to take a shower. I didn't talk. I didn't cry. I was just numb. And again, man, bless her heart for not trying to have an expectation of how I was supposed to respond. She just loved me for me. And a couple weeks later, we were finding out we were having a boy. And that's when it started changing for me. And this is where my question is going to come for you, Shay. So I started thinking once we heard we were having a boy, it was like, man, like he's going to carry your name. What's he going to think of you? He's going to challenge you. He's going to question you. He's going to see what you do. Like, what are you all about? What do you stand for? And I started reflecting on everything. And then I was just like, man, everything cool about dad for him has already happened. Like every badass thing he's ever heard about his dad happened before he was even born. Like, that's fucking lame. And you know, so I started bridging this gap mentally. It was like, because I felt like I had no identity, right? The Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor was gone. The police badge was gone. I'm naked. And then it was like, no, you're not. You made that Marine. Mm-hmm. You made that police officer. There were things in you that are instilled in you that created an outcome in the Marine Corps. And bless, God bless the Marine Corps and the leadership and the people I had around me. But at the end of the day, I still had to choose to be a certain level of Marine. I still had to choose to be a certain level of police officer. And it clicked and it was like, oh, I don't need to reinvent myself. I don't need to fit real estate. I need to make real estate fit me. It's me who made the Marine with good people in my life. Don't get me wrong. It's me who made the police officer. Hey, I can make Will the broker. I can make Will the real estate agent. But I got to do it my way. There are values in me. There's work ethic in me. There's identity in me. And I'm different than everyone in this industry. And that is a fucking good thing. And all of these core values can be implemented and thrown into this industry. Oh, and I'm going to shake shit up. I'm going to do some cowboy shit. And that's when I put my fucking Will badge back on and started realizing, hey man, you're everything you need to be to do this. This, you don't need to reinvent yourself. You don't need to, you know, start over per se. You're not starting over. All your experiences in life are going to contribute to this industry. And like, man, the reason why like my story pops out and my question now for you is it feels like as you're talking, you had an aha moment as well of like, okay, baseball's gone. And man, that was my identity. But at some point, it sounds like when you start talking about your small wins after your overdose, you started realizing, hey, man, everything I did to build the baseball player is everything I can do to build the guy over here in the entrepreneur world. And oh, fuck, baseball didn't make me. I made me within baseball. I can make me within this over here. You know, and I'm super curious, Shay, about some of your perspective toward, you know, some of this and like where I kind of had my aha moment in, hey, man, I'm going to make real estate fit me. I'm going to come in with everything that I've applied and everything I've put forth in any different industry and apply it here. And let's fucking shake this thing up. And, you know, boy, have we. And, you know, we'll get to Eli here. I know he's probably falling asleep over here. We're going to get to him in a second. We met. But like, Shay, did you have like an aha moment, or did you start bridging the gap as well with realizing, oh, fuck, I made that ball player. I can apply. Okay, I'm not playing ball anymore, but I can apply all of that hard work and consistency and everything toward a different industry. But now that I've had a perspective shift and I understand I need to still do self-love, I'm not going to be neurotic and obsessive and toxic with my new entrepreneur world, but I'm going to take the hard work and I'm going to take the skill sets. I'm going to remove the toxicity from it. And I'm going to apply all of that over to here and man, fucking watch out. Like, was there anything like that for you?
Yeah, that's an amazing question, dude. And that's happened within the last year, probably since COVID, because I was rocking it in real estate in COVID and everything shifted. And I just, you know, as a Major League Baseball player, like we pivot, we understand how to do things. So because we're always failing, right? So the biggest thing that I struggle with a lot of professional athletes struggle with, when I left Major League Baseball, I was kind of the cancer in the clubhouse. I was the guy that's like, dude, you could play, but you're always angry. So I was always trying to prove to everybody that I wasn't that guy because I have that soft, tender heart as a pit bull. And that just made me a yes man. And that's what led me ultimately down to that night in the van of being where I was, because I was trying to be something that I wasn't. So
you went from one extreme to the other kind of thing, like a pendulum.
I was just trying to prove to everybody, like, I'm not that dude. I'm like, I will take my shirt off my back for you. I will, like, I love people so much and have a passion and like what drives me now is I don't want people to feel the pain that I felt when I was on top of the world, not just going through, like I was on top and that's just so much pain going there. And then that's what drives me, because so many people are in that spot of living in that pain. So once I realized, like, this ain't working, man. Like the first year of my marriage, like with my wife, like she stood, like your wife, like she's like just stood up, and I wanted to play the victim. Like, don't you realize who I was? I don't care who you were. You're not this person. You need to figure it out, man. Like, let's go. You got so much you can offer. So I started tapping back into, I was so scared to tap back into that Shay Hillenbrand that was a Major League Baseball player. That character in that story was a really entertaining character for a freaking movie. The stuff that I did was crazy. So I thought that was a package deal, right? So it's like I left everything there, the intangibles, the work ethic, navigating failure, just going out of every single day, the hunger, the drive, the never giving up and pushing through the 60%. Like I left that there, and I was just in this land over here of entrepreneurship of like, what do I do? And I go get a job at a car dealership. I'm like, I don't want to be around these fools. And I go get a job at Home Depot. And then I go get a job and like I'm in state. And I jump from broker to broker because it's like, these people are fools. Like, this is like, this doesn't even make any sense. So now I started uncovering and tapping back into the old Shay Hillenbrand of like, dude, yeah, like I have everything now. I'm going to make more money now than I ever did playing Major League Baseball. And that's just a byproduct of serving and impacting and doing the things the right way without the toxicity, without burning the bridges, without that ego. Look at me. Because every time I walked into a room, I was like, hey, look at me, man. Like a game winner off Mariano, 2-time All-Star. Look at me. Yep. I'm Shay Hillenbrand. Like I needed that ego stroked because I had a huge gap inside of me that I couldn't fill with that. And when we're having success, and I see all the time in the real estate space, I see guys having success. There's a neighborhood right now that's rocking it, man, in real estate. But he's riding 100% off ego because he doesn't know where he's at. He doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know the foundation. So that ego tries to feel that gap between the emptiness inside and bridge that gap with the success that we're having. And I see it time and time again. I'm like, these dudes are going to set themselves up for destruction. And
they already are.
He's got the Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. He's got the like everything. And I'm like, dude, like, let me help you, bro. But they think I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So the thing is, like, I found my space inside of EXP. And the reason why I found my space inside EXP is I want to help real estate agents. I want to help people build their businesses. And it starts with who you are.
And just leading from the front. And I'm so glad you made that decision, right? Because, like, here's my big thing. Like, you want to, like, let's talk about some of the big guys in the room, right? Like, the big successful people. And Bradley talked about this. He's like, you know how I got in the room with all those guys? I became one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And I'm so glad you chose EXP. And I'm so glad you chose to just represent yourself and build your own network, because it's like some of these guys, man, like, you can't dive in and save them. Some of these guys, as much as we, you know, it's like when you're raising your kids, man, it's like you want to give your kids everything you didn't have. But the fact that you didn't have it is what created your ability to be who you are now, right? So, like, we want to save people from feeling pain or from that fall, when in reality, the fall is what might save them. And that's the only thing that's loud enough for them to fucking hear. You know what I mean? So it's like, instead of you going and trying to convince everybody that you can help them that's already on their egotistical mountain, you just build your own through action, through leadership, through leading people the proper way. And they watch you build, and like, that respect is going to come, and they're going to see it through action, and you're going to build your own. And that's fucking cool. That's fucking really cool. And that's where leadership has to come from, man. Like, you know, this is where, like, I get super passionate because of, you know, my history with leadership within the Marine Corps. And my biggest thing is, like, look, man, if we can teach people to be high level humans, I don't care what industry you're in, you're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. If you have an understanding, if you have a capacity for that industry, if you have some level of talent, you got to have that, right? You got to have some talent, right? If Shea couldn't throw the ball, it doesn't matter how much he loves it, you ain't playing third base, right? You got to have a strong arm there. And then from there, it's a work ethic and everything else. But, you know, if we can be a high-level human coupled with capacity for more, consistency and all those good things, like, you're going to be successful. You're going to be successful. And if you're in that world of ego and showing the Lambo or whatever it may be, it's not scalable, because anyone that's getting attracted to you that's looking at that, you don't actually know how to grow them. You don't actually know how to lead them. You don't actually know how to teach them. So it's going to be a domino effect. Not only can you risk falling, anybody that's ever followed you will then also fall, because as your reality crumbles, well, their reality was put into your reality. And it's like a fucking domino effect, and it's dangerous. But sometimes those things have to happen. But, like, for you to go through everything that you've gone through and then leading from a place of where you're at, those are the fundamentals, man, because as Elon and I, obviously, we're with EXP as well, and we're building our network, and we're helping a lot of agents. And, dude, every time we're talking to agents, you know, it's very little the specific real estate question. Or, you know, it's when we talk about building your brand, building your network, doing more transactions, it's always coming down to consistency, right? Resiliency, being a professional and just knowing your craft, getting the work done. It's everything that's fundamentally sound, where, like, I could have said those four things to baseball: knowing your craft, consistency, resiliency, being a professional at your habits daily. Those things I just mentioned, you could say as a cop, you could say for a baseball player, you could say for a podcaster, you could say for a realtor, you could say for a doctor. It's fundamentals, right? Which means if it's across the board that way, yeah, it's more of like just where you're at with yourself versus your actual proficiency in that craft. And, like, yes, you have to be, and, like, I'm uber big on realtors actually being a professional at knowing their craft. I think that's mandatory, but you're not going to put the time, effort, and consistency into knowing your craft if you're not good with yourself. Because the second it's painful, the second you don't want to study, the second you don't want to go educate yourself, the second you don't want to make those calls, the second you don't want to do something, you're going to fucking quit, and you're never going to create enough traction to actually have any progress. But creating enough traction to create progress doesn't come from, you know, like, you don't do something every day for a year consistently to create traction because you just woke up one day and did. It's coming from you. It's coming from the well of who you are as a person and how much work you want to put into that. And that's where, like, leadership within real estate, it matters. And, like, man, it's fun to see you inside of real estate because the level of success you've had in certain lanes, there's not many realtors that can speak to that. And that's where I kind of have some fun with myself and with Eli being in real estate. It's like, hey, we crush fucking deals, right? We crush. We crush YouTube. We've had a lot of success there. Like, but at the end of the day, like, there's my background, there's his background that's outside of real estate that we're bringing into real estate. Same thing with you, Shay. Like, there's just not many realtors that have gone through a certain level of trial and tribulation where they can speak to it. So a lot of your realtors are just thinking about the next deal. But deals are here today and gone tomorrow. We're talking about scalability. Mm-hmm. And scalability is super fun to talk about. Your downline, your revenue share, your just your overall brand, getting your own TV channel, or your own TV show, whatever that is. Scalability is so romantic to talk about. But it's this whole nother level of trial, tribulation, consistency, effort, self-doubt, and different breakthroughs that you got to get through that not many realtors have any context to speak to. So some of us that can speak to that, that's where it gets uber powerful. And if people are going to learn from fucking Shay and they drive a Lambo and they're in a different network, well, fuck them. They should be in your network, because if you're giving them your time, they're on Team Shay. Like, Team Shay is not playing for the Diamondbacks teaching some guy on the Red Sox how to hit a baseball. It's just not going to happen. Aaron Rodgers is not throwing his playbook or his time to a different quarterback on a different team, man. Like, it just, even if he loves the guy, hey, I love you, Mahomes. But I'm like, my time isn't best spent helping you if we're not on the same team. If you got skin in the game and you're on this team, that's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But until then, I'm just going to keep leading from the front until you have no option but to come over here and be a part of a movement.
Love it.
So, Eli, I'm sure you got some questions for Shay. So, by the way, Shay, this is my business partner, Eli.
What's up, Shay?
What's up, brother?
Shay, I'm curious, man. What does your business look like right now when it comes to real estate? Is it slanging homes? Is it helping agents slang homes? What does that look like? And how long have you been in the real estate game? And I'm going to throw another question here. Man, what made real estate the platform for you that you chose?
Yeah, so I've been in the space for 4 years now, and my heart is for Major League Baseball players. My heart is for the professional athlete, of guys that are making really good money, that are rich, and having those conversations with them to say, hey, dude, let me help you invest your money before you lose it all. Mm-hmm. I have a network of people around me in this space, so we do a lot of real estate investments for Major League Baseball players. And then I also have a heart and a vision for Major League Baseball players that, or minor league baseball players that leave the game and are lost. And I just messaged some guy today in a private group, Major League group. He's like, I'm lost right now doing lessons. I'm like, dude, get your real estate license, get in this space, let me lead you. We can create generational wealth. Mm-hmm. So my vision is to get these Major League Baseball players, professional athletes, man, they're best guys to have out there as team leads or whatever inside the space, because navigating failure, performing under pressure, teamwork, going out there and rocking it when you don't have to tell them anything. You just got to give them a structure and a lane to go in, and they're just going to crush it. And, you know, there's no better business model than EXP to for the wealth quadrant to be able to generate wealth inside the space when you're, you know, as a real estate agent. So originally how I got into real estate was my wife loves real estate, but she's in the banking space with Wells Fargo. And she's always on researching homes, researching this. I'm like, you should get your real estate license. She's like, I can't. It's a conflict of interest. She's like, you should do it. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So I got my license because of that.
That's what my wife told me.
Same here.
All three of us.
We did investing and stuff like that. I want to save commissions. And like I said, in the game 4 years, I think I'm at my fifth brokerage. I started out at KW and went over here, went over there to find a model that fits me, because my passion is not the production side. Actually, I'm doing some production right now. Like, that's not where my value is. My value is the mindset space. My value is the peak performance space. My value is, like you're saying, is just the high level human beings, creating that and getting a team of people or a community of people inside the real estate space, like agents, and say, dude, like, here we go. What do you want to do? Let's take you to the promised land. Because I know how to get there, and I know how to do it with fulfillment now, which is a unique combination. So there's an array of things that I'm doing inside this space and some other business. But my heart is the coaching, the speaking, and the masterminds, the Zooms, the teaching, and equipping people to get the hell out of their own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And you know what's fun? You can do this forever, bro. You know, like, at some point, baseball was, even if it was, you had, even if you're Derek Jeter, right? Like, at some point, that career comes to an end, and you got to go do something else, right, and figure that out. And, you know, the fun part about, like, entrepreneurship and doing some things like this is, like, it's like Warren Buffett, man. We can be in our 90s still cranking, still influencing. Like if you, as long as your mind is culpable, capable, you're there. You don't necessarily need your body for it. And I think that's when I really started getting like a healthy level of neuroticism. Is that a word? Being neurotic about it, but in a healthy way, because it was like, man, this is my new battlefield. Mm-hmm. It's the battlefield of business.
It's having a mission.
And like, yeah. Oh man, like I know how to navigate this and I've got some skill sets. I'm seeing things from a bird's eye view now. And hey man, I don't have to ever put this away. Mm-hmm. Like this is something mm-hmm. that we can just continue to. And it almost allows me to feel good about getting neurotic about it, because as much as I want to accomplish everything right now, I know I don't have to. When you're playing baseball, when you're in the Marine Corps, if you're a cop, and like when I was a beat cop, just being on the street answering 911 calls, getting in this shit,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're enjoying it. But you know, like, hey man, at some point you're not going to be able to be hopping these fences and getting in the shit like you are in your mid-20s, mid-30s. Like at some point, man, you're no longer doing that. You're going to be on a command staff level and mm-hmm. whatever it may be. And so like, you're trying to enjoy it while it lasts,
mm-hmm.
but it also just, man, like it just get it. I think that's where some of the toxicity comes from with being neurotic and getting obsessed with it, because there's a certain pace to it that you, man, I got to hit it right fucking mm-hmm. now, because it's here right now and I got to fucking get it. And if I don't ball out right now, it ain't going to fucking happen. And I think that's where it just gets a little toxic versus this. It's like, man, I still feel like I'm neurotic and obsessed mm-hmm. with what we do. But I'm also, I don't take myself so serious. If I take a fucking day to lay on a beanbag and read a comic book, I'm not punishing myself over it. It's like, mm-hmm. because, dude, we could be in our fucking 90s, still rocking out, still having levels of influence. It'll just be mm-hmm. at scale, but mm-hmm. we don't ever have to kind of give this up. And like, you gotta hit it while it's hot kind of thing. It's yep. like, no, it's, man, we can crush this for a long time. And it's almost like, man, it allows you to pause in certain moments and be a little bit more deliberate and intentional. It's almost like mm-hmm. how Conor McGregor fights versus a Nate Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Diaz is going to slap you around 200 punches around and he's throwing shit against the wall and it's cool and I like it. But then you got a guy like Conor in his prime where he was composed and you're like, man, like he's not punching as much and like the clock's mm-hmm. going to run out. But it's like, hey, dude, he's so deliberate and intentional with when he decides to throw a punch. Every time he hits you with it, you fucking bleed
mm-hmm.
and they hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, I like that in business. I don't need to fucking be like dog paddling in the fucking water, splashing around, barely treading water. It's like, I want to have, you know, like, mm-hmm. but having a little bit more composure and intention behind your deliberate strikes. So when you do fucking strike, man, it's a big yeah. hit and there's a lot of impact. And yeah. it's almost like a mountain bike on a higher gear,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Where like it's harder to turn, but like they're way more you're productive gone. Versus you're on first gear just spinning, but you ain't mm-hmm. fucking going mm-hmm. anywhere. And I mm-hmm. feel like when you kind of first get into it, or like when you have those momentum areas, when yep. you're new at something, like you're kind of doing that versus now, just very intentional, very level headed. And I feel like because we're like that, I'm also less fatigued. Mm-hmm. My mind isn't overran. Mm-hmm. I'm not fucking mm-hmm. tired at the end of the day. It's like when you have that intention and you're so deliberate with what you're doing and you can kind of see where the pieces play out, man, I don't ever feel mm-hmm. burned out. Mm-hmm. I just don't.
Shay, I've got a question for you, man, about your fulfillment factor, because it was, you know, baseball, you weren't feeling it, the zoo, you weren't feeling it. Are you feeling that now? Is that something that you feel like you've kind of got a grasp on? And
he's like, fuck no, I'm still fucking angry, fuck. Yeah.
What does that look like for you, man? And what are you doing to change like, that?
Bro, like I could, if I die tonight in my sleep, I'm cool because I found it. I found what I was searching for my whole life, and that's my smile. Hmm. That's the fulfillment. That smile is a byproduct of being fulfilled. So when I walk into a room now, my goal is to shift the energy in the room, right? Hmm. So if we want to do business with other people, if we want to be able to influence other people, so many people hear so much crap out there. You got to be in a position where they feel you, mm-hmm. right? So they got to be able to feel you when you talk, and you got to be able to fill yourself up. So I talk about getting into the flow, doing the morning routine, doing my pregame workout. What am I doing every day to get into flow? Like I'm going up to the mountain, I'm doing trail running. I'm getting my mind, body, and spirit. I take my dogs with me mm-hmm. and I love doing that. I spend time with my wife. I mean, just doing different things that we got to really understand that we can control to fill ourselves up every day to get into that flow, to be able to influence other people. The highest place we could resonate energy wise is being able to tell the truth and believing in what you're saying. So if I tell the truth and I believe in what I'm saying, then I'm game on, man. I walk in any room, I'll talk to anybody, I'll do whatever, and there's going to be some action taken. But that second thing, you have to believe in what you say. How many people do we come across in this space, in the real estate space, that just talk crap? They talk gibberish. They talk around themselves. Mm-hmm. Like they're stroking their egos. Like, who the hell is going to even listen to you, man? It doesn't matter what the hell you're saying.
But that's the problem is they do. And man, here's why I'm okay to talk like you are. Here's why we're getting big on agent attraction. And this is big in the military world. I've got some, you know, like from that world, it's frowned upon to be out there in the public and speaking. And there are some guys that do it. And there's some legit guys, really legit guys, that see the not so legit guys talking and building a big following. And those legit guys are like, hey, like these guys aren't legit, this and this. And it's like, yeah, man. But if you legit guys don't stand up and speak up, then the public doesn't know the damn difference. So it's the same thing in the real estate world. You know, there's a lot of people that are doing that. But if some folks that are really out there doing a great job and building big brands and building a certain level of influence, if we don't speak up and start showing how it's really done and showing what's possible, then you let all the smoke and mirrors win. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of our fault. It's because you got new realtors coming in, or you got older realtors that have been around for a while that have to like make a pivot and get onto social media, do things differently now because the tape player thing is gone, and they don't know where to go. And then they see these people talking, and yeah, it's smoke and mirrors. But if that's the only thing.
Tape player?
Yeah, tape player. Tape player. Oh, I love that, bro. Tape player realtors, man. It's like, hey, dude, like that worked for you back in the day. It's just not anymore. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to gravitate to a different person, and they see these guys that are just out there tooting their horns, but they're not legit.
Called tooties.
But they just don't know any better. You know, like I was talking to a kid. He came over to us over here at EXP, and he loves it, man. He understands the scalability, and we were talking to him about, you know, your influence and being less production, because Elon and I, we crush fucking deals, dude. We've done that for a long time, and but now I'm starting to get less in the production world, and more of my focus is coaching and influence and leadership, and my time just isn't best spent in doing the deal. But don't get it twisted. I fucking crush. There's no one better. So I'm sorry. There's just not. Like, the way that we're able to crush, the way we put deals together, we crush that. But we are better teaching agents that and teaching agents how to build their brand than just me out there doing the deal. Mm-hmm. And there was a kid that came over to us, and he had a buddy at Keller, and he's like, yeah, like, so, hey, what's their production? And I think he looked me up on like production, and he's like, oh yeah, those guys aren't bad. And I go, hey bro, my production's going to say zero in like 12 months. Like, if you're still talking about personal production, you don't get it. You're playing checkers, not chess. You're playing.
Exactly.
You're not like, hey man, we're over here doing multiplication and you're on addition. Like, if you're just trying to look like, hey, man, you think my production's like solid, it's actually been fading for the last year and a half. And you just don't even realize that the only reason there's any deals there left is because they track you for 24 months on there. Like, my shit's going to say zero. And it's because my new client are agents, man, helping agents build their brand, build their business, learn how to crush deals, learn how to get their own TV show, learn how to have a podcast, learn how to level up. And if I'm teaching agents how to go build themselves, then I'm at scale. And that's like a general on a battlefield. Okay, if you got General Patton in World War II just pulling trigger, he doesn't win war. Mm-hmm. He doesn't win battle. He's got to influence the infantrymen. Mm-hmm. If he's out there just wanting to look through his scope and pull the trigger, hey, dude, you're a general now. You've done that, and you've driven through the ranks. But if you don't hit that certain level of influence, then we're not going to make more use, and we don't win. And now, well, we're influencing thousands of deals, not just my personal production. It's we're influencing how many deals now, how many brands now, how many realtors now. So that's a new client. And it's interesting to see people that gravitate to that, and people that don't, that just want to look at their own personal production. It's like, hey man, first and foremost, I did 34 deals just my first year in production. And that was the slowest I ever was. All we've done is gotten bigger and better since my first year. So first and foremost, you who think you're doing personal production, I beat the shit out of you when I was doing personal production. Secondly, you got to learn how to like level up, because you're going to be 65 years old one day. And are you still selling a house at 65?
Chasing deals, man.
Fuck, man. Because that deal's here today, gone tomorrow. Yep. And I'm not disrespecting deals. I fucking love the deal. Mm-hmm. But if you're not putting yourself into a level of graduation through your career, what is there for you? And it's kind of the fault of the franchise model, right? Mm-hmm. Berkshire's, Remax's, Keller Williams, bless their hearts, got no bad blood toward anybody. But when you're in that model, it's very driven to, yeah, you're just a gerbil that owns a team, or you're an independent mm-hmm. realtor at Keller Williams, and there is no promotion.
Yeah, well,
you're,
it's self-centered. Like, there's no bringing the guy up behind
There's no bringing the guy up behind you, but there's also no promotion. Mm-hmm. You start as a realtor. You've been here 35 years. You're still a realtor.
Right.
With an EXP, the way you can build your brand and your business and your level of influence, you can be promoted several times with how big you can grow mm-hmm. and how much impact you can have through this model. And Shay, you know this through sports, and I know it through military, man. Getting awards, getting recognition, getting a level of influence because you went from being a team leader to a squad leader to a company commander to a battalion commander, and you're leading 500 Marines to being the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, and you're leading 200,000 Marines. There's promotion in there. Humans need that scalability, need to feed their ambition, need to mm-hmm. have promotion, or you die inside. You live in quiet despair. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a traditional real estate model, man, like you start as a broker and you end as a broker. Like there's just not much, you know, there's not much that's feeding your ambition, you know, and man, you burn out, you die out, you get toxic, you get negative, and then you start not being so good at your fucking craft, and then you blame the world for changing because you've been in the phone book for 30 fucking years named AAA Realtor, and that doesn't fucking work anymore, and you got to do this thing called the internet, then you got to do this thing called Facebook, then now you need to make fucking TikTok videos, and well, the world was better 30 years ago. Shut mm-hmm. the fuck up. It wasn't. It wasn't better 30 years ago. It's not worse or better. It's just different, mm-hmm. but you're so toxic because you're burnt out on doing the same thing for 30 years that you're incapable of making that pivot versus, man, people that understand that now, regardless of how long you've been, if you understand where you can have influence and impact, you start seeing that, oh, there is life beyond the deal in real estate, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So when people talk about production, I just laugh and I'm like, man, I cannot wait till my home snap says zero. Because then people can just think I'm not a big deal. Great, I'm the white guy on a football field running a 4.3 40. You don't think I'm going to run a go route and catch a touchdown, so you're going to play shallow as a safety. Hey, man, I'm not taking any disrespect to that. You're assuming, and that's cool, but I'm going to go catch these touchdowns. And by the time you figure me out, it's too fucking late. Mm-hmm. And everyone that saw it for what it was, right? Everyone who saw Julian Edelman for what he was, well, they picked him for his fucking fantasy football team, didn't they? Same thing, right? So people that are seeing EXP for what it is, there's a lot of influencers coming over. There's a lot of people getting on board because they see it for what it is. And those are the people I want anyway. I have mm-hmm. zero interest to convince anyone of anything beyond a certain level. I'll educate you on the model. I'll educate you on the opportunity. I will do zero convincing because if I'm trying to convince you of something now, it looks like, hey, what's in it for me? And it's not. That's not that, right? So educate them on the opportunity. Educate them on the model. But I'm not going to sit here and stroke you a bit to hope you come over. Like, no, man, because that time I'm doing that for you, I could be putting into someone else mm-hmm. who is interested, who does see the vision and the model. And I'd much rather pour my time and coaching into a guy that mm-hmm. that gets it, that's committed, versus trying to talk somebody into it. You know, like, you ever try to talk somebody into liking baseball and you got to coach them? Fuck.
100%, dude.
Right? Like, no, I'd rather slam my dick in a door than do that, dude. Yeah. You kidding me?
Shay,
I was the only one that would do that.
Shay, what's next for you, brother? What you got coming up in the future, man?
Just building out, bro. Just doing what I could do to help out. Building out my coaching business. Mm-hmm. I help top performers, business execs, and entrepreneurs. And I'm doing that inside EXP and outside of EXP. And just using my voice. Got a movie that we're going to put together in my life.
Oh, shit.
I envision a theatrical release with an A-list actor. And then just moving forward and loving life, however I pivot, starting a sports agency with Major League Baseball, stuff like that. So just shaking and baking, man, just navigating each day at a time and see where it goes. Like the last 4 days, I was showing clients around, real estate clients around. Before that, I'm building out a coaching program. It's just loving life, man.
That's cool.
Just, on the grind, dude.
I can't say enough about being able to figure out who you are, where you want to go, doing the work. Oprah always says the best. You're in charge of filling yourself up and keeping yourself full. Everybody's different. Before, I was the hard ass. I was the F you guy, all that. Now it's like nothing but love, nothing but passion, nothing but energy, nothing but getting out of my own way and doing the things that make me fulfilled. Is that's using my voice to impact the world, to help other people find their voice. whether it's inside the real estate space or outside. It's like when we can get people to understand what they're here for and get their voice, which I call mission, purpose, all that stuff, the game changes. Now you're influencing people on a massive scale.
So you want me to be you in the movie, huh?
No, I want you to be the sidekick, the demon that comes and kicks my ass all the time,
dude. Bro, I would crush that role.
He's
I would
good
be
at that one.
I'm a great alter ego.
Yeah.
I'm a great Hey you.
Yeah.
Hey you. Come here. No, man, that would be awesome. Man. Hey, have you heard of Ben Newman?
I have not heard of Ben Newman.
So Ben is like the main leadership mindset coach for Alabama football, Kansas State, like half the NFL, half of Major League Baseball. I'm on his personal speaking team. And Ben Newman is a close, you know, new personal friend of mine, you know, super cool guy. But man, I'm going to chat with him. It'd be fun to introduce you to him because he works with a lot of prior athletes. He's got a pretty good network where he goes and talks to construction companies, to Alabama football, to literally half the NFL, like a lot of cool stuff. And I think that'd be a good connection for you guys to maybe chop it up sometime, and maybe he can talk to you about some courses or being a part of his speaking team, and maybe, you know, or maybe you're going to own your own speaking company. Who knows? I don't want to unsolicit anybody into your life, but I think he'd be a good connection for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I love meeting new people. Love seeing where it goes. See if we can align visions. So yeah, man.
It'd be fun, man. And we're going to be throwing events here, like real estate events here in Denver every month throughout this year. And we're going to do a fun summer bash. But man, it'd be fun to get you out, to have you speaking out here in Denver sometime. Mm-hmm. Where I think, you know, we did one at Empower Field where the Denver Broncos play. That one was super cool. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to do another one this summer.
And you're just Coors in Arizona,
Field,
right?
Baby, come on. Coors Field. Come on.
Yeah, dude, we can do Coors Field. I'm down for that. Yeah, fuck yeah. But it'd be fun to bring you out, man, and maybe you can do some speaking with us and just have at it and build and grow. And it'd just be fun to have a guy like you out here for some of that stuff, man. Like, it's raw, you know, and you've got some context with what you can speak to. And it'd just be fun to have you a part of that.
I'd love to be a part of it, brother. Anything we can do to help out.
Awesome.
You know me.
Where's the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, MLBmindset.com is my website, MLBmindset.com. And then the socials is Shea Hillenbrand, Shea_Hillenbrand on IG. It's all good, man. You'll find it.
Hell yeah.
Just Google me, man. You'll find me.
I want to find those fights, man.
He's like,
yeah, you'll find all the crap.
I'm going to go dig up some shit now. Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Like, he's like Ricky Bobby. You know, he's like, hey, man, pretty much the best there is. High level, accomplish everything. If you ain't first or last, where do we find you? Google me, Eli, you
that's right.
Fuck.
That's the best answer, bro.
I need a shirt that says Google me. But
yeah,
like,
that's hilarious.
You know? But like, don't put my name on it. Just like, expect people to know my stupid face.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, it's been fun, brother. I'd love to have you on again. And we'll throw some music on and get out of here. And we'll chat offline for a couple of minutes. But man, super, super fun having you on. Super fun hearing about just some of your story. And, you know, I think you and I just have a lot to relate to because we come from different lanes, but they're very similar with intensity and identity. And there's just a lot of shit there, man. And over the past couple of years, I've seen a lot of like athletes at your level really sympathize with veterans and what they peel away from. And man, I wonder if there's ever a project we could do down the road where I know we do like service dogs for veterans. We do physical exertion events for veterans, but I wonder if we could have like a, what do you call that when you have like a friend overseas and you write them a letter?
Like a pen pal.
Pen pal.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if there's a way to like bridge the gap and like give a professional athlete a veteran or a veteran a professional athlete as like a pen pal. And then maybe once or twice a year, like they meet up at events, you know, we can throw a big event. But there is a lot to say about veterans and what they go through and professional athletes and what they go through. And it would be cool to kind of merge the gap and almost like introduce dudes or let them have fucking pen pals or something. But then they meet in person once or twice a year for an event. I wonder if there's something there down the road that maybe we can throw together. Because man, there's a ton of crossover. I know veterans love professional athletes. We idolize them. A lot of us want it to be them. But then professional athletes are very thankful and respectful and look up to veterans for what we do.
Yes.
There's a mutual respect there. There's a mutual level of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. There's a mutual level of a ton, right? That I think, man, that would be cool almost to, you know, to think about like that pen pal program with professional athletes and,
it's a great
and
idea.
Veterans, man. So maybe
the two main things we have in common, brother, is identity and mindset, right? Mm-hmm. So the mindsets are the same going out there. Like, it's not, we don't do live or die. Like, if we make a mistake on the field, it's not death, but it's death to our identity, right? It's death to our ego. It's death to that. So it's like, there's so many things we can relate. And I'm with you, man. Like, I'm all down with that, bro.
Oh, we'll put it together. The first one we'll do will be zoo related. We'll put together a little spec op team to go figure out Carol Baskin and if she really did what she did. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we'll take some. We'll take Hillenbrand and a couple ball players. I'll put together a spec op team.
Just you and me.
We'll
just
go. You and me. Just you and I. We'll go run some recon and see if we can't find some of these bodies, bro.
We got to record it, bro. We got to create a reality show through
hell
it, bro.
Yeah. Hell yeah! The tiger. Hilarious. The tiger reckoning. Right? or we'll just stick to kicking ass in real estate and building people's brands. That's probably
or that.
If we get bored or too rich, we'll go do the reckoning. The reckoning.
But it would be great branding, bro. This is the guys that called out Carol Baskin.
Could you imagine you and I dressing up as tigers and lions and making animal sounds to disguise ourselves in her
little
farm?
That's how you're sneaking in, right?
Yeah. Remember Ace Ventura when he was like hiding in the rhino?
Yeah, in the rhino and it came out his ass.
Dude.
Oh, shit.
We got some fun
tigers are like that. They'll tear you up.
Dude, no shit, right? But no, man, we super appreciate it. Everyone listening, man, super appreciate everyone's support. And we'll get out of here. And Shay, hang on for a second, man. We'll play some outro and we'll holler at you guys here in a couple of days. We've got another podcast coming up with Jay Kinder, super cool guy. We'll talk more about that when he's here on Friday. But everyone else, enjoy the rest of your week, and we will hear from you guys Friday.
All right, see you guys.
Out. For nothing, I can never take a day off.